Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Folks, thanks for coming along tonight for our discussion on The World Needs a Different China. And we have our two speakers, Wuokai Shi, who was a prominent student leader in the Tiananmen Square demonstrations of 1989 and who first addressed the Sydney Institute as a young man in 1989. we had a function on China, and at that stage everyone spoke in Mandarin, and we had a translator, Roger Brown. In the last couple of decades, among many other things, Wuokai Shi has been a campaigner for democracy in China. And Chin Jin, who is an associate member of the Sydney Institute and was in Australia, as I recall it, in 1989, and is now an Australian citizen. So Chin Jin has been to many Institute functions, but this is the first time he's addressed the Sydney Institute. Well, yes, from the podium. He's tried a bit from the floor with some pointed questions. But it's great to have Chin Jin here, and he is, among other things, the Secretary General, the Joint Working Committee for the Chinese Democratic Movement. So we'll start off with Wuokai Shi, who will speak for about 15 minutes, and then Chin Jin for the same time. And then we'll do questions and discussions and finish just after the hour. So, Wuokai Shi, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You need to be close to me.
All right, I'll try my best. Actually, thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good to be here. Good to be back. From the photo that he has shown you, that you can see that, yes, quite something has changed in the last two decades. One of the things that I hope is that I managed to polish my English good enough, so this time I don't need interpreter. But the message, hopefully, to be the same. 20 years, yeah, I was here December 1989, that photo was taken, December 1989. It's an exciting time. The year I started my exile. I don't remember exactly what I said here, but I am probably quite confident of China's change toward democracy is going to happen soon. That has not been the fact, unfortunately. However, my over-optimism at that time was shared by many. After all, it is the time that will be remembered by the history as the time of falling of Berlin Wall. If history of 20th century to be written in one page, it will record two main campaigns, anti-fascist aggression and anti-communist despotism, both under the flag of democracy. Perhaps history will remember the 20th century as the century of democracy. Again, unfortunately, it has not been the case for China. Although we are the pioneer of starting the second campaign, we, the Tiananmen student, first blow the horn of the victory. It was a time when the world seemed to become a better place. The falling of Berlin Wall, ending of the communist tyranny in the Eastern Bloc, emerge from prison of Nelson Mandela, independence of East Timor. The Chinese dissident, however, had a very mixed feeling, with a slice of bitterness. The days in Beijing, when we took the street, and the short while after the massacre, we had the world's attention, sympathy, and support. Your prime minister burst in tears in front of the whole world, and that was a moment to remember. But that didn't last long. Pretty soon, business interest took the driver's seat. Human rights will be mentioned during the meetings when government heads visits Beijing, after toast for success on business talks. Chinese regime ignores the message, business goes on. The democracy movement in China remains as an uphill battle. In fact, it became more and more difficult. Inside China, dissidents and opposition movements are suppressed more and more severely when the pressure from the world is gone. And outside China, democracies are more and more hesitant in providing opportunity and venues for us to voice our view. They worry that, and I quote, they said, "It may send a wrong message to Beijing." Imagine what kind of message does Beijing get for the change of attitude. The word Tiananmen did bring shame and embarrassment to Chinese leaders, and pretty soon later, it became an inconvenience to the world leaders. We became an inconvenience. We definitely did feel betrayed. But that didn't stop us from keeping the dream we had 20-some years ago. Dissidents in China never stopped their struggles, even when the means for publishing a few, articles and initiating a signature campaign to advocate citizen rights, one can be sentenced for 11 years. Like my advisor in Tiananmen movement and a mentor in life, Mr. Liu Xiaobo. But in June 3rd, 2009, the night before the 20th anniversary of the massacre, I took an airplane and landed in Macau, territory of the People's Republic of China, to turn myself in. Macau is the only place in China I can technically get to with my Taiwan passport, with my travel document. In the statement of this surrender, I announced, "For the atrocity conducted 20 years ago, Chinese government carries complete and unshakable moral, political, and legal responsibility." After I surrendered, I wish to engage into polemic with Chinese government, and I shall express just that point, taking the Chinese court as the expressing platform. My attempt to turn myself into the Chinese authority via Macau was not very successful. I was detained and then forced back to Taiwan, where I board the plane. And the last year, 2010, on the 21st anniversary of the June 4th, I made a similar challenge in Tokyo. I tried to force myself into the Chinese embassy and get arrested again. So we, the Chinese dissident, who started the worldwide democracy campaign, felt betrayed by the democracies in the world, continue our endeavor for democracy alone. Last October, Nobel Peace Prize Committee announced the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize goes to Liu Xiaobo. I made a statement that day that this is a genuine salute from the world to our long-time efforts, recognition of our goal, and a reminder of an unfinished business. It is like when we start to feel completely alone on a very difficult journey, somebody came along and tapped on our shoulder. That was a good feeling. A little long overdue, but it was a good feeling. And the world didn't become a better place as we expected in the late 80s, early 1990s. Well, not for China, at least. In the year 2008, Beijing hosts Olympic Games. And then last year, Shanghai World Expo. These events have been seen as the coming out party of China. With the economic situation nowadays in the world, China didn't just come out. It became the undeniable force to shape the world. when we used to say, you know, China is around the corner, China is our doorstep, now China is in the world's living room. It is no longer just a world factory, an economic engine, a billion people market to dump the excessive products of the industrialized countries. China today is maybe the country who is the solution of our economic crisis and a very important force in the stability and the security. Yet, this country doesn't speak the same language, doesn't use the same sets of vocabularies, and doesn't follow the rule of the game the rest of the world follows. It suppresses its own people and apply the same tactic when come to conflict with the rest of the world. And you want the world to endorse its behavior. The time has come for the world to begin in engage China intelligently, something it has not done in the past 20-some years I have been in exile. It is time to abandon the delusional notion that economic prosperity will lead to political reform. It hasn't, and it won't. It is also time to abandon the specious argument that China's special condition justifies authoritarian one-party rule. Yes, China is a big country, but that does not automatically strip its peoples of rights we hold to be fundamental elsewhere. Recently, similar revolution, similar uprising took place in Tunisia, in Egypt, in many Arabian countries. I think those uprisings, those events, should also be the proof of my note here that there is no country really special enough to be excluded from human rights, from freedom, and from democracy. And no matter how the condition, how the history set a country's condition into a unique or different from the other countries, people's desire of freedom, people's desire on democracy remain the same. We don't have to look far to find two examples of authoritarian command economies that once imprisoned dissent and stifled free speeches and are now prosperous democracies, South Korea and Taiwan. The West played a role in their transition, encouraging free trade and applying pressure when it comes to human rights. It is time to take the same approach to China. Pressure will not transform China into a thriving democracy anytime soon, but it would provide hope to brave Chinese who struggle for voice to be heard and are seeking redress for land grabs, forced relocations, and illegal detainment of petitioners, among a host of other injustices. I urge the world, especially democracies, Australia included, sending China a clear message that Norwegian has, that other than the business interest, principle still matters, values still matters. I urge the world to think about the policy toward China should not be only focused on short-term interest, although we know democracy tend to do so. But also in democracies, we provide opportunities for global vision to be realized, such as what happened in the last century, when under the flag of democracy, the world almost won the great campaign of anti-communism. That's because of in democracy supported people like Gorbachev, like Lech Walesa, when they demonstrated their vision to the world. I urge the world to understand that appeasing China is not the only available method, and the world should come up with a more intelligent method to deal with China. China doesn't speak the same language we speak, doesn't understand democracy, is the democracy to be, is the democracies, democratic countries to be blamed. We had the chance to teach them that set of vocabularies, but we were too busy making money and forget about that job. We had your support 22 years ago when we took the street of Beijing, and we are still fighting the same fight. And I ask for your support again. Thank you.
Many thanks. Jin Jin.
Thank you, Gerard. Thank you, Anne. Good evening, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great honor to address the Sydney Institute to express my views about China and its political and its political development. I have been connected with the Sydney Institute for over 20 years, but my address today is the maiden one. Mr. Wu Kaixi is one of the iconic figures of the 1989 student movement, and I'm very pleased to be his co-speaker. Since the Tiananmen Square event, China has experienced a dazzling array of changes for all to observe. The world admires the economic achievements and the progress of China. I'm sincerely happy to see any advancement China has made, and I'm happy to acknowledge the economic success of China. But I feel that there are other more important aspects we must also monitor. A well-developed political system, embedded social morality and environmental ecological sustainability, which together with the robust and healthy economy underpin the development of China. Some of the darker sides of China have been very effectively concealed by the Chinese government and deceitfully presented. Our views and concerns are neglected and overlooked due to the weak volume of our voice. The massive amplified official propaganda by the Chinese government is rendering our concerns into a cell of silence. Therefore, I would like to again thank Gerard and Anne for this great opportunity to have our voice at the Sydney Institute. First, social morality in China is swiftly downgrading. The burgeoning Chinese economy gave birth to a large amount of corrupt officials and billionaires overnight, entitling them to the lion's share of the social welfare as a result of the collaboration of power and interest. Now the Chinese people seem to put their trust in nothing. The suspicion and vigilance have become part of the Chinese people's way of life. This toxic mistrust is like a cancer, which is invasive enough to crumble the very structure of a society. Next, we shall have a look at the environmental problem in China. According to the reliable source, China is certainly one of the most polluted nations in the world. The ecological destruction as a result of a misgovernment has expanded from northern China to Korea and even Japan. Lastly, let's have a look at the Chinese political system. China remains autocratic. There is no election of leaders, no independent jurisdiction, no freedom of speech, no freedom of association, and all powers belong to the monopoly of the Chinese Communist Party. About 3 weeks ago, China's human rights situation was again highlighted when Hu Jintao visited the United States, when so many U.S. congressmen urged President Obama to raise this issue as to exert political pressure on China. In my view, this kind of criticism and a limited pressure could achieve very, very little. We must first clarify this issue. The core problem in China is not human rights itself, but the political system. The unchecked political power in the hand of a dictating party. It is naive to seek fundamental human rights improvement without necessary clearance of the one-party dictatorship. the West has consistently been concerned by human rights issues of China, and China has become accustomed to this mild criticism and is fully aware that the West is not seriously committed to plan strategies and outcomes. 2 decades passed, and both parties, the West and China, are familiar with the tactics of each other, and both are happy to play this game on a merry-go-round. Sometimes I have this kind of a speculation that it may be just the China the West want. Awarding the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize to Liu Xiaobo, in my view, has a great significance to China. The Norwegian provided the first step of acknowledgement and encouragement to the Chinese people in their pursuit for democracy. It is also important as a new starting point of China's political change, and also as the first domino of the political and the communist political dictator to fall. The Chinese people's democratic pursuit is now back in the global spotlight, and moral support for this movement reached to its peak. For this reason, I traveled also from this country, from Australia, the most remote place, to physically take part in this award ceremony. In the history of the Nobel Peace Prize, 3 laureates, Wawensa, Nelson Mandela, and Kinda Jong, went through the path from prisoner to laureate, and finally to presidents of their nations. Will Liu Xiaobo follow their footsteps? I cherish this expectation. The response of the Chinese government to the prize was very negative, and it reacted in a paranoid manner to prevent people from mainland China from attending. Furthermore, thuggish treatment was employed to harass domestic human rights activists. For example, Ms. Huazhe, a filmmaker and a human rights activist, was kidnapped and house arrested for over 55 days until the ceremony in Norway was over. World leaders have made strategic mistakes in their dealings with China. Strikingly different policies were employed in the dealings with China and the former Soviet Union. The autocratic China has been unconditionally tolerated under the mistaken concept that the rapid economic growth would lead to political change, in the mindset that eventually increasing trade and prosperity would bring democracy to China. Jagland's courageous decision sounded a wake-up call, and it is time to ask if the United States and the West want to wake up from their sound sleep. China is a strategic partner to Bill Clinton, strategic competitor to George W. Bush. In fact, competition and opposition of West and East ideology and political systems is far from over. The West camp, headed by the United States, must have a clear and far-reaching view for the global strategy, overseeing 10 years, 20 years, or even 30 years beyond, to ensure the forward progress of the world. I'm now gravely concerned about the compromise of West democracy. In my observation, the value and the morality of West democracy has been compromised. The West is inclined to barter away their core values for short-term interests. This might be explained by the well-known saying, there are neither everlasting friends nor everlasting friends in the world. There are only friends with the same interest. Where is the ideal model for China's political change? I feel helplessly in the middle of a crossroad because of the compromise of West democracies. With the enormous law of money, the West has been silenced. The core spirit and ethical values of the West have been relegated to a sub-position or sold out as bargaining chip to be used in trade and economic exchanges with China. Except for the economic birth, China remains politically autocratic, morally downgraded, environmentally deteriorated, with prevailing social crisis. But the West just turned a deaf ear and a blind eye to it. That reminds me of an American movie, The Merman, and the figures. In the movie, Rick O'Connor, High Priest Imhotep, and Kyle Benny Gaber, it is pretty easy to duplicate these figures in the reality of the relation between West and China. It is very sad. The self-cremation of a youth in Tunisia sparked a huge wave of united action across the entire country, resulting in the stepping down of the president, which then impacted Egypt and potentially some other countries in the Middle East. Is it possible that we could see the fourth wave of global democratization kicking off from North Africa? Could it expand another continent to China? It is possible, but not probable. One thing I can be very sure, very much sure, that the Chinese dictators are very uncomfortable about what is happening in Tunisia and Egypt, while the oppressed Chinese people are inspired. It could be the best show which reminds Chinese people, and also myself, that freedom and democracy can be only achieved by fighting for it, not waiting for it. The movement pushing for an open and democratic China is in fact a conscience movement, which with little impact because lack of a substantial backup and a new blood. The 2010 Nobel Peace Prize is a catalyst greatly boosting the movement, but we must remain cool-headed. The substantial material backup to fundamentally reform China is still distant. Without genuine understanding and support by the Western democracies headed by the US, the impact and the moral power originated from the Nobel Peace Prize will fade away. To conclude, I would like to quote some ancient Chinese sayings which remain as relevant as they were when I last shared them with an Australian audience. Eat not food offered by a fierce tiger, despite hunger. Sleep not in a robbed bed, despite night. Drink not stolen spring water, despite thirst. Rest not under a decaying tree, despite hate. 鸡不从猛虎食, 木不从野雀栖, 可不饮盗泉水, 鸡不惜恶母蝇, Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.